Welcome to the all new William B. Henry Experience. Talking to business owners, local community leaders, and just overall cool people. This season is sponsored by the Billings Chamber of Commerce. Go to www.billingschamber.com. Welcome to the William B. Henry Experience, and we are back, season three. A big shout out to the Billings Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring season three, and we're going to do some exciting things this season. And one of the most exciting things I'm going to do is talk to some of the community leaders, and I happen to have one of the more vibrant leaders of the community just transplanted in. We're going to talk about that as well. I have Mr. Krikor Jansesian. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm so good. It's almost a crime to be this good. Not quite, right? So I wanted to have you on my show for a couple of reasons. So we're just going to run the gamut of things. And I'm going to start with your background. Where are you from? How you got to Billings? Because Krikor is not the most common name in Billings, Montana.
No, it's not.
Right? So just kind of tell the people where you're from, how you got here, some of your background.
Well, I've actually written a book on this, but I am of Armenian descent. Born and raised in Lebanon, the country in the Middle East, and fortunate enough to have a wise father who took the family out of harm's way and immigrated to the U.S. And when I was 7 years old, blessed to be here for the last 43 years, just excited that I get to have a family of my own here and don't have to worry about the bombs dropping next door neighbor, you know, so...
So I always thought it was cool. So Krikor and I had the opportunity to meet through diversity, equity, inclusion kind of deal, if you will. And Krikor is the chief operating officer at St. Vincent's.
That's correct.
Hospital. So tell about, like, let's just break it down to, like, your last, because you've been here a little less than a year now.
6 months.
6 months. So tell about the transition from Southern Cal to Billings, Montana. Just talk about that a little bit, because I don't think people understand what transplants go through.
Absolutely. You know, thank you for having me on the show, William. This is an exciting opportunity for myself and my family to be in a new state, new city, where I can establish myself without having landed there 43 years ago. First of all, shout out to all my friends in California, Los Angeles. I was practically born and raised in LA. That's how I'm going to say it, because I opened my eyes at 7 years old and I'm in this little town called Glendale, California. And the only reason why we were in Glendale, California is because that's the one place where we had one family member outside of Lebanon. So where else would you go?
Right.
You're not going to go to the East Coast. You're not going to go to South, North. You're not going to go to Montana. You're going to go to the most familiar place, and that was Glendale, California. Soon after we landed, my father, the entrepreneur that he is, was able to open up his own business, sell his business, got us a house that we lived in for 40 years, sold it, moved on to a different house. So I saw the American dream come to life in front of me at 7 years old. By the time I was 10 years old, we were living in a different kind of a home, big home, and your own backyard, and you know, we're able to have our own car, just blessed all the way around. So we enjoyed the California life. I still, you know, go back because my entire family of origin is there. My mom, my dad, alive and well. So now, why would I want to come up to Montana?
Yes.
Well, I got lucky with the most amazing wife. She's from Boston. When we met in grad school, we both studied clinical psychology. She said, do we have to stay in California our entire life? I said, no, but let's raise our kids here. And then when they're at the age where they're deciding for themselves, we can decide for ourselves what we want to do as well. So I have three kids, two of them college age, one of them starting high school. And during the pandemic, it came to us that, well, our kids are going to leave California for college. Our daughter is right about to embark on high school. This may be the opportunity for us to make a move. Better life, healthier lifestyle, definitely. More outdoors, a better balance. And that's why we sought after Montana. And again, the combination of finding a great job and a great state is not easy to do. So I got lucky and we made the move 6 months ago.
Man, so we are lucky to have you in the community. Like I said, I've had probably more experiences with you than most. And like I said, just how genuine you are. I really appreciate that. And that's why I really want to have you on the show. So we're going to transition. So you're at St. Vincent's as the Chief Operating Officer. And we all know right now we're in a serious pandemic and things are going on. How is hospital life through your lens?
Hospital life, I've been in healthcare for 29 years. On a good day, it's stressful. During a pandemic, it's incredibly difficult. Your heart goes out to all these frontline workers, physicians, nurses, techs, the people that make the hospital go round and round. I mean, for a year and a half, we've been behind a desk on Zoom calls. But those nurses and doctors are wearing their masks all day long, 12-hour shifts, taking care of their community, and they're seeing their community suffer through this horrible virus that just came on us out of nowhere. So on a good day, stressful. On a pandemic year, incredibly heart-wrenching. Let's just put it that way. So on a good day in a health environment, you're saving lives. You have people thanking you. You have people writing you letters for thanking their family members and saying, counting their blessings that you're in the community. Those are the good days that I'm going to go after. I thrive on making an impact in our patients, in our community's life. In a city like Billings, 106,000 or so in the city, 166 something in the Yellowstone County. And by the way, we get patients from across the states. You see it even, you see yourself making even a bigger impact with the reach that you have throughout the counties and throughout the states. And again, you just go back home more humble and aware of what you decided to do is making an incredible amount of change in other people's lives.
Yeah, it's crazy because I don't know if you know this about me, but I worked in healthcare on the side for 20 years, and I ran blood centers around the country. Yeah. And so, you know, when you talk about on a great day, you know, it was the getting the letters because you put something in a pouch that somebody needed to save lives. On a bad day is you don't have enough product to save lives.
That's right.
And a lot of times we are in that reactive mode because, you know, like I said, people don't donate as much as they need to. So when I look at it now, you know, I look at the hospital situation, the crisis that we're in, just as a country, right? I don't think people really are grasping it. So forget the argument about mask, no mask, vaccine, no vaccine. If I'm telling you the hospital is full and something happens, like, you should probably take heed to that, right?
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. And so what are some of the things that people need to understand about the pressures, even like something like staffing? How is staffing at St. Vincent's? Just curious.
Well, I'm gonna come back to the town that we're in. Staffing is difficult. Staffing is hard. And I think that's part of the reason why in the news last week, you saw the National Guard coming to our town, and even five additional personnel will make a difference. Part of the reason why staffing is hard is, one, there is a national shortage on all disciplines. I'm just going to focus on healthcare. Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking about the next door restaurant that we have a hard time getting into, mm-hmm. or they're closing early because they don't have enough staff. Healthcare has always had a challenge in recruiting the top, the brightest nurses, the doctors, the techs. One is it is a demanding field, and you really can't make a mistake if you want to stay in the field because it's front and center if you make a mistake. Second, being so far away from the large metropolitan areas of our country, not many people know where Billings is. Not many people want to relocate to Billings. And to be honest with you, we pay competitive rates. We don't do bad compared to where I came from. But it's, again, the supply isn't enough for people to come out to Billings and to work here and dedicate their life. Listen, I did. I think this city has incredible opportunities for those if they just tested it out or came out here and saw what we have to offer. We just have to start talking about it and marketing what we do have to offer. That's what I think is the shortage is coming from.
So I'm gonna spin it a little bit, yep. Because, you know, this is where you and I really connected. You know, I know you have a PhD in diversity, equity, and inclusion as a concentration. And I may have misstated that a little bit, but I think that's the major concentration. Tell me just through your process of being in the, you know, in the professional world for over 30 years now, and being a minority, what do you see some of the biggest challenges to get somebody to a community of our size being?
I think many people are going to ask about jobs. Is it going to pay me well enough so that I can continue living the lifestyle that I want to live? I think not only will we be able to pay you well, but you may have a better lifestyle than where you're coming from if you're a professional. If you're not a professional, and I have my own, you know, son right now who is working and is having a tough time finding a job that would sustain his hobbies, his life, because we're not paying the competitive $15, $16, $17 that most other bigger markets are paying. He's getting offers of $11, $12. So let's leave that group out for a second. For the professional market, I think we pay enough that you might have a good enough job. We just have to speak it, and we have to, I think the chamber would do a great job at celebrating our successes of our city throughout other chambers, throughout other big cities, and just invite people out here. I think it's a good example of what you did maybe a month ago with that event for the 3-on-3.
All right, right.
How many people did you have here in the city? How many people came as a result of your event seeing the restaurant scene, the night scene, the big, beautiful open spaces scene? So if we did a little bit more of that, other strangers that have never been to Montana or been to Billings are going to say, wow, look at this. And we're planting the seed. That's what we need to do.
Yeah. So let me continue down that line a little bit, Krikor, because I think it's important. So, you know, we are working right now on the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. And I know a lot of cities, I like to say this term, and it's my show, so I can say whatever I want. It's sexy now. People are talking about it. But you and I have lived this our entire lives, right?
That's right.
What is it? Tell me what you're getting from that experience of being a part of the advisory committee for that the chamber is putting on right now. How's it benefiting you?
Right. You're right about the emphasis and the concentration on my PhD. It is on diversity in a big market, because I never thought that I would work with one type of group. I never thought it was going to be a white male in their 40s and their 50s that's going to come to my office and I'm going to, you know, do therapy with them. I always knew that I was going to get the concentration of, you know, interracial, intraracial relationships, the child, the, you know, the couple. And I didn't even explore same sex. Go imagine that. Or I didn't even explore the LGBTQ community. I just went straight because dissertation was already hard enough. So what did I need to do? So what am I getting from this? First of all, it's incredibly eye-opening that 20 years later, we're having this conversation. I graduated from my degree in 2000. And back then, when I used to ask people, how many of you are interested? In a group of 100, I'd get maybe 20 hands up. Today, I'm so proud of you when I see you perform that you have a class full of 40, 50 people, and everybody is engaged. Everybody is interested. They want to hear more. They want to do more. I don't think your four-hour sessions are long enough, William. You need to do a little bit longer than that, and especially the four sessions that we need to go through. So it's enlightening to me that you're doing that in a state with 85% Caucasian, I would say.
Ish.
Yep. Ish, 80. Yeah. Let's just say 80-ish.
Yeah.
But there's this desire to learn more and desire to recruit more diversity to bring over to our city. It just, you know, adding flavor, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let me make it just a little bit more lighthearted. So you have family, wife, couple of kids that's at college age, and you have a daughter that's in high school.
That's right.
How's your family adjusting? Because, again, when you come to a new place, you know, I think the person who takes the job can kind of figure it out, but you got to worry about those external pieces that you bring with you. How's your family adjusting?
You're 100% right. I came 3 months before the family arrived. So I was here from March through June, and I was adjusting really well, making friends, seeing the city, sightseeing, eating, going out. And it almost felt like, you know, I belong in the city already. So after they came up, I didn't say much. I just wanted them to experience it all. Let's talk about my daughter. I think the school did a good job of having some over the summer activities for the new kids to get acquainted with and build those relationships. So when school started August 23rd, she already felt like she was one of the crew. Still, you know, heartaches about some of her classmates having friendships from middle school and elementary school and kindergarten. They were born and raised here, so she still has to work hard to fit in. She's doing well. My wife, I think she's enjoying it. She's not accustomed to the kindness of our neighbors, if I can say that.
Absolutely.
It's a nice city. Nice enough that strangers spark up conversations in the store. We're not used to that. We're used to leave me alone, let me be on my way, and let's move on. You're in that space, I'm in this space. We don't interact. Hmm. I came from a county of 10 million people, a city of 4 million people. People don't interact. Over here, people like to interact, which is a good thing, right?
For sure.
That's the human experience is, hey, if I can share with my experience with you, look at you and us. Hmm. We've never known each other. You're from the Florida,
Florida, originally.
Absolutely. I'm from California originally, two different coasts, very different coasts, very different upbringing. And today we're sitting across from each other. This is phenomenal, in my opinion. This is what gets me going.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. So we're going to move to, I got two last thoughts. So Creekor has graciously is going to brace the Billings community with his presence at the first annual Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and More conference in April 2022. Yeah, you are. Okay. So you got to tell them a little bit about your topic, because I think it's a real cool offering. So tell them about what you're going to speak about.
So interestingly enough, when I interviewed for my job, one of the physicians in the audience had Googled me and came up with the name of my dissertation. And it, short summary, my dissertation was on interracial and intraracial dating and marriages, and what keeps a couple together versus what forces play an influence to separate them. Now, being the minority that I was, I may appear white, but I'm from a clan of 7 million people in the whole world. I knew that if I said, "Mom, Dad, I'm going to marry this person," they're going to say, "No, you're not." And sure enough, that's what happened. And a lot of the research that we do comes from our own experiences. So my own experience was a very difficult one. I wanted to see what the community around me, and if I were to test it out, would actually say about the pressures that keep you together, or the pressures that say, this isn't worth it. I'm going to go back to mom and dad who are not supporting me, or, you know, I don't want to alienate them for the rest of my life. That's what I'm going to talk about. And it's like, what even gets you to say hello to a person that does not look like you?
So for those of you all wondering, like, this guy is full of knowledge. So if you're planning on coming, I say check out Creekor's session about that. So no guest leaves my show without telling me what their life motto is, or that thing that gets up and drives them on a daily basis. So what's that thing for you?
I don't hold any grudges, man. Life is too short. My wife says I don't know how you don't hold a grudge. It's crazy. We have a fight. We have an argument. 2 minutes later, I'm like, which restaurant should we go right now? She's like, how do you do that? Well, it's easy. Life is short. I'm going to take every second to the fullest. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy the people around me. And if I just, you know, what's that, like, sulking on the one thing that upset me, who's that going to eventually impact? Me.
Right.
And I don't want to do that to myself. So I'm not going to say happy-go-lucky, but I just don't hold grudges. I don't want to live with regrets. I want to enjoy it. I want to love. That's it.
You heard it on The Experience first. Mr. Creekor Jansesian said, no grudges. Life's too short to hold them. Hey, thank you for joining me, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We'll be back.